Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to The World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At The World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie ahead, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this astounding future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. How are you, my friend?
I am amazing, Phil.
Now you're talking. It's Amazing Wednesday on The World Transformed, and we're taking it up a notch this week because we got three amazings in our show title. I don't know if you noticed, Stephen, but that's amazing times three, okay? Because tonight we're going to talk about amazing materials, amazing products, and amazing industries. And if you're thinking, hey, that sounds like Phil found a bunch of stories that weren't all that closely related, so he had to give it a very general title, you are correct. But what they have in common is these things are all, what, Stephen? Tell us.
Amazing.
They're all amazing.
So, exactly. You're getting three times the amazing for the same amount of money, guys, so, you know.
That's right. I don't see how anyone can have a problem.
Work with us here.
Our attempts here to deliver the amazing, our efforts to deliver the consistent efforts to deliver the amazing. That's what we do here. And actually, this is really cool stuff. And these things are all related because what we're seeing is, we talked about on Monday. We talked about new approaches to thinking, how we're thinking differently. We're incorporating data. Data is driving, coming up with new models. Well, we're also making stuff very differently than we have in the past. We're making different kind of stuff, and we'll talk towards the end of the show about some of the different kinds of stuff that we're making. But just how stuff is made is undergoing a fundamental transformation in the world right now, and we're at the very earliest stage of it. And if this all starts to sound familiar, if it all starts to sound like something we've talked about before, well, we're going to hit on that in just a little bit. But let's begin with this big one. It doesn't get much bigger than this. And once in a while, an over-the-top headline is actually accurate. And the headline here was, how synthetic biology will make more money than the entire computer industry. What do you think, Stephen? Accurate headline?
I think there's a huge possibility this is correct. And so, imagine what we're saying. We're saying that in a few years, the biggest company won't be an Apple. There'll be a synthetic biology company that's the equivalent of Apple with as much money or more, perhaps. That's part of maybe what we're saying here.
Potentially they will be. Or all the, 6 million companies that are doing this will if you added them all up, it would dwarf Apple. It could go either way. But absolutely. The point is that there's more market value in what potentially can result from synthetic biology than in the entire computer industry. It's kind of mind-blowing to think that might be true, that this industrial revolution could be occurring. People haven't heard too much about it, but it's big. And what are we talking about, synthetic biology? We're talking about using DNA. We're talking about using biological processes to produce material goods. Sometimes things that we think of as organic stuff, things that we think of as biological stuff, like milk, so that you can essentially manufacture real milk. And we've talked about vat meat, right? It's kind of a similar idea. And it goes a lot further than milk, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, Craig Venter for years has been working on the production of oil, petroleum, from using synthetic biology. So imagine if a company like Exxon was entirely dependent on synthetic biology. that would be that would be huge. I mean, Exxon has you know, I'm old enough, Phil, to remember when Exxon was the biggest company in the world. So
yeah, exactly. Me too. Yeah.
So that's part of it. And imagine how great that would be, rather than pulling petroleum from the ground and then burning it and releasing you know, carbon into the atmosphere. What if you were using a carbon neutral process where, you know, yes, it releases carbon when you burn it, just like always. It's just oil like always, but the process of making it is sequestering carbon because it's a it's an organism perhaps that's making it. So you know, that's you know, it could, you know, could solve some problems beyond the fact that it can make a huge amount of money too. So,
well, indeed, I mean, let's think about what we've said up to this point, and we've just glanced at these, but even just glancing, you say, well, so this could become a major source of how we get our food. We might start producing our food through synthetic biology, milk being one example, but I think there are lots of there are lots of other examples, meat being another big one, you know, that we could just start producing our food through it. We could start, you know, take some chunk out of our energy share from synthetic biology, even if it was a small chunk, you know, smallish, 5-10%, you're talking about a huge, huge, huge market there. And the other thing that is discussed in the articles is, the article is pharmaceuticals, right? That synthetic biology has the potential to produce drugs much more efficiently, much more targeted kinds of treatments than we've seen in the past. So this could become a major piece of the overall major supplier for healthcare. So yeah, if you look at, I don't know if it's going to be the biggest industry around there, but it's going to have a huge impact on food, energy, and healthcare. That does start to sound like a pretty big industry, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. And, you know, there's concerns about how do we feed, you know, ourselves, you know, and using traditional agriculture, I think, you know, there's some real reason to believe that we may not be able to do it. But, you know, going forward, using techniques like this, that gives us hope that, you know, maybe we're not destined to starve ourselves, that we can. Feed ourselves using these methods like this. But I mean, it's pretty much using synthetic biology. What you're doing is programming it to build whatever it is you want. And did this article give some examples of some things that are not like organics that you could do with the?
It doesn't really go into that. No.
Yeah. I've often heard that, you could, DNA computers, for example, are a possibility, and I'm just wondering if you could actually build things that are you know, computer related, even with DNA processes. That maybe that's a subject for another show.
Well, and in fact, but it's a great what you've just suggested is really where the two would meet, isn't it? It's like,
right.
What if it outsold the computer industry because it took over the computer industry, right? And although this article doesn't go there, that is definitely one possibility. But let's switch gears because
gives me a particular idea. So, you know, we can do DNA computing, but it's not really efficient computing, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. But what if we had smart food that as you ate it and consumed it, it was able to analyze what's going on inside your body and report back to you. You know,
right.
Because, you know, you're doing synthetic biology, but it's computing within your food that's going on. I think there's some possibilities there. In medicine.
We've talked about tiny computers in our pants, now tiny computers in our food, right? And,
right.
And maybe in our stomachs too, right? We keep these computers on hand. It really does speak to the potential for a kind of a ubiquitous computing environment. So it might make more money than the entire computer industry. It might replace it altogether. But there's other models for for how you get stuff. And I want to talk about that real quick. This headline, this company plans to grow armies of drones in giant tubes of chemicals. You read this one and you go, wait a minute. Are they serious? And yeah, they're completely serious. They're talking about, they call it a chemputer, a machine that is going to synthesize the materials needed to produce physical goods. And the example they use here is drones, but obviously this same kind of process could be used for any physical material, you know, any physical product that you can think of. So this could very well be vats that grow computers. This could be vats that grow automobiles, right? Telephones, you name it. Two things about this. One is it sounds a lot like synthetic biology. It's almost like biology approached from the other direction, isn't it? And the other thing it sounds a lot like is nanotechnology. It sounds a lot like the molecularly precise, manufacturing that we've been talking about for some time. It was about a year and a half ago when we talked about Eric Drexler's new book where he gets into this. One of the directions he said that is pushing us, one of the drivers that is pushing us in the direction of true nanotechnology is chemical synthesis, that ultimately working with chemicals at the molecular level, you can produce the products that you want to produce. So, you know, we'll have vat-grown meat via synthetic biology and maybe vat-grown cars and vat-grown computers and phones and drones from these kinds of processes.
Well, you know what else it reminds me of, Phil, is you remember Dr. John Storrs Hall, his idea of utility fog.
Indeed. Well, you know what? We're going to come to utility fog. We've got that one hiding out at the end of the show. But that's exactly where that starts to direct us. But this idea that you can build products up, you know, from like loose materials, you know, without the mechanical infrastructure to build them. That really does kind of replicate the model of biology, doesn't it? I mean, that's how biology produces structures.
Yeah, we've always produced our things top down. You know, you take a tree and then you reduce from that tree boards and you build your house, right? That's the traditional model. You start with something big and then make it, you know, and remove everything you don't want and then use it. Well, this is actually starting from ground up the way life does and builds it from the very ground up to be atom for atom, basically exactly what you want. So it creates the possibility not just for producing things quickly perhaps, but also producing things that were never possible before.
And I'll tell you what's exciting about this. If you look at this story on Mashable, is we've talked about ideas like this. Stephen, you and I have been talking about things like this for,
years,
right? You know, more than a decade and a half, we've been talking about this. But this time it's not us talking about it. It's BAE Systems talking about it, right? And they're pumping, I can't find the figure here, but a lot of money into pursuing this. This, you know, this is about to become real. At least they're going to give it a try. I think it's the future of how things will be produced. And yet it's just kind of sneaking up on us as the future so often does. We, you know, we hear about these things for decades and then we say, well, maybe it'll happen someday, maybe it won't. And then it just, you know, subtly starts to happen. And, we're watching people play Pokemon Go and we don't even notice that, manufacturing is being, you know,
it's the overnight success. As with most overnight successes, it takes, you know, 20 years. It's just,
exactly.
And it's all happening behind the scenes. You know, Pokemon Go, I got to mention this just real quickly. You know, our friend Werner Vinge, his novel Rainbow's End predicted Pokemon Go almost perfectly. You know, I mean, I have to, you know, we've mentioned that novel on the show before, but
of course.
I just have to once again. If you have any interest and the Pokemon Go phenomenon, what it could possibly mean and the implications of it. Now, that novel is not a bad place to read. And it's a great novel anyway, so recommend.
If you want to understand what's happening in the world, right, read Rainbow's End.
Yeah.
I think. And it's true. I hadn't thought about that, but among many other things that he got
that
right.
That he predicts, yeah.
Yeah, he called the Pokemon Go thing years before it happened.
I guess we shouldn't be too surprised. He was one of the main predictors of the singularity too. I mean, he kind of has his finger on the pulse, doesn't he? So
he introduced a generation of geeks to the idea of the technological singularity with that piece he wrote back in 1993. Really kind of set the stage for an awful lot of what came later. And I'll tell you, he would not be at all surprised by the changes in how stuff are produced that we're talking about here tonight. I think this is all very much in line with a Rainbow's End kind of a world. Now, here's a more specific example of what happens when we start making these kinds of changes. 3D printing with bamboo fiber. Researchers at Oak Ridge National Laboratory are using bamboo fiber in 3D printing experiments to determine whether bio-based feedstock materials are feasible in additive manufacturing. Obviously, the chemical synthetic manufacturing we talked about previously is one step beyond additive manufacturing. But, additive is, this idea of, this kind of progressive idea of building stuff up from the bottom that we see with 3D printing. And I thought this one was interesting, because it brings to the fore the question of, do these two different models, synthetic biology and chemical synthesis of materials, are they going to meet in the middle somewhere, right? As we start putting organic stuff into the more mechanical processes, and as synthetic biology, as you were mentioning, Stephen, potentially begins to produce more potentially mechanical pieces, do those two processes merge? Do they become one thing, or does one model become dominant over the other, and we just think of it all as being one or the other? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it does meet, but let me back up just a second and describe this picture that I'm seeing here within this article. It is showing a 3D printed object that looks like a table with a tablecloth over it.
Mm-hmm.
Am I describing that, to your satisfaction, Phil? That's
if somebody showed
what
me
it
that
is,
picture, that is exactly what I would say it was. I would say, oh, okay, well, there's a table with a tablecloth. Yes,
tablecloth over it. Well, it's not. It's one single piece essentially of wood that's been 3D printed from bamboo fiber, and so it's like a solid piece. And so you can do things with wood using 3D printing. If this kind of 3D printing works, you can do things with wood that you can never carve out, or how long would it take to carve something like this? Well, I can't even imagine.
It would take a master craftsman a long time. We're talking about really organic curves and flowing. I mean, it looks like fabric, right? But what you're telling me is if you touch it, you could knock on it, right? Because it's wood.
Right, it's wood. It's wood. So and so, that's really a neat deal to be able to use wood in 3D printing. And so you're asking, well, does all this meet? And I'm saying, yes, it could, because, the ink stock or the print stock or whatever it is you call the stuff that you put into your 3D printer that has bamboo fiber in it could be produced synthetically. You wouldn't even have to grow the bamboo necessarily. You could grow this these bamboo fibers in vats, couldn't you?
Exactly.
Using synthetic biology and then create something that's wood that's had nothing to do with nature. You don't have to harvest this stuff. You just make it. I think that's it's fascinating.
Wow, you think talk about it's the evolution of things like plywood and particle board, huh? I mean, this is where they're heading. Where they're heading is aesthetically a very nice direction, and also probably from a practical standpoint, what we'll be able to do with it. In a very nice direction too, but yeah, I think
it might make us better stewards of the planet too. I mean, it could be better for our environment certainly as well.
Well, going back to the synthetic biology story, one of the things I talk about in there, and this is just a good example of multiply this across the board. But if we start making our milk that way, it's going to end a lot of cow suffering, right?
Right.
I mean,
and it would end a lot of methane being put into the atmosphere because
that's right. A lot of damage done to the environment through those rather harsh, conditions that we subject livestock to. Yeah. So I think there's tremendous environmental benefits as well as ethical benefits to moving in this direction, and tremendous synergy between the two. As we've noted here, when you start combining the kind of chemical synthetic approach with the biological approach. So then what do you get for your effort, right? So if let's talk about some of the amazing products. If you've got amazing industries producing amazing materials, what products are going to be the result? And here's one. Smart dust is coming. New camera is the size of a grain of salt. Now this involves a third principle that is implicit in the first two kind of ideas that we talked about here, but it's a critical one for moving in the direction of nanotech anyway, and that's miniaturization. But as we're producing new kinds of components with the potential to mass produce them that synthetic biology or chemical synthesis suggests, you end up with this very interesting world where you can make a camera the size of a grain of salt, and you can just output, I guess, literally to echo Carl Sagan here, literally billions of these suckers, right? This being
right.
Just one example of the kind of thing that you can put together, a camera the size of a grain of salt. Now, what do you do with a camera?
We mentioned on Monday night's program, Phil, that we're entering a world with so much data that we can actually do away with our models and science and just correlation equal, if you do enough correlation, it is causation, right? And so this is another tool to give us that world, right? I mean, if you can have dust cameras, you're basically can pick up data on everything, right?
Everything all the time, right? To quote the Eagles from Life in the Fast Lane. This now moves us in the direction of, you were talking about JSTOR Hall's utility fog, right?
Yeah.
Here's one of the key components of utility fog, right? Cameras the size of grains of salt that, immediately the application they talk about is endoscopy. They talk about, well, how much easier it would be to image inside the human body with a camera that size, right, than, this kind of...
Being controlled, by the way, by the DNA computers in your food.
There you go. Exactly, right. It all kind of works together at that point. When you see those pieces coming together, it's like all those cameras. Okay, you can worry about the privacy side of it because that's definitely something to be worried about. But when you're reproducing sensors, when you're reproducing data collection components at that scale and in those quantities, and I think to your point, Stephen, when you're also producing the ability to process and to store that data through equally fecund means, right? You're taking advantage of the same kinds of paradigms to produce those. Then yes, the data explosion that we've seen up to this point becomes a blip, right? And in fact, we're going to look back and smile in a patronizing way when we say that the first couple centuries of first couple decades of the 21st century was the age of big data. When we enter the true age of big data, right, which is going to be driven by this kind of technology. You think about swarms of these little cameras just collecting everything as it's occurring and the ability to process that data. You combine that with what we talked about on Monday, and our knowledge of the world around us just explodes, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And that's amazing, Phil.
That is truly, truly amazing. I don't know, Stephen, do you want to get one? You wouldn't want one. No one can eat just one. Do you want to get a few million of these salt grain-sized cameras? Would you put them?
Well, I mean, I would, like you say, endoscopy, just finding out what's going on in your body so that, Here's what I would love to have is like an app on my smartphone that is reporting to me, here's what's going on with you right now. And the ideal meal that you need to eat is this based on what's going on with you. And also you need, you know, we recommend this supplement for optimal health. And you're getting that kind of data all the time. And, you know, we can choose to take care of ourselves in ways that were never possible before because we simply didn't know, you know.
Well, that's right. Well, and you think about the real-time aspect of that. And you think about how crude taking supplements is now,
right?
Relatively, right? It's like, well, I'll take one of these every day, right, because this helps me every day. But if you're, you know, if you're checking in on yourself and something pops up in your phone or in your visual display field, whatever you'll have, and it says, you need a little of this right now. You know, you are deficient in this. This is what your body needs this minute. And to have that feedback coming in all the time. Actually, if you have your food synthesizer in your house, just dialed into that, right?
Yeah,
it'd be perfect.
It would produce it and give it to you right there next to where you're working or whatever. Here, eat this. And
you're gonna get the meal optimized.
You know that feeling that you get when you're in the zone and everything's clicking. I mean, imagine if because of this sort of stuff. You could have that feeling going all the time. I mean, you're just always 100% optimal because, you know, you're doing what you need to do to stay there.
Well, in fact, that touches on another one of our topics for Monday, which is people trying to, you know, look for the best way to feed their brain with nootropics and with, you know, changing their diet and those kinds of things. But this would ultimately be the way to make it happen, right?
Right.
One brain world interaction at a time. And I like the fact, Stephen, that in our world, when we put the model together, it's all based on eating, right? Rather than not.
Yeah. so much more preferable than not.
Rather than avoiding eating. Beyond those personal applications, though, you see a tremendous explosion in terms of what materials become available to us, what we're able to do with them, yes, within our own bodies, within our homes. When our homes start to include furniture like that 3D printed table with tablecloth, I think aesthetically our world becomes more beautiful. It becomes more highly functional. And, you know, this is occurring now. These are changes that we're witnessing occurring now. And we'll really start to see the repercussions of them in the next couple, 3 years. 10 years from now, I think it'll be considered perfectly standard fare that everyday objects in our lives will have been produced either through synthetic biology or through chemical synthesis or through some interesting combination of the two that we haven't even imagined yet.
So basically, you know, what was the advice given to the graduate? Plastics, right?
Plastics.
So
that's right.
Would we say to the young man coming out of college, synthetic biology? I think that we could give worse advice than that.
We could. It's not as pithy as one word. I got two words for you, son. Synthetic biology. Also,
that's
chemical
right.
Synthesis. Actually, it can't be summed up in one word, but listen to this podcast here. Just, I got one word for you, podcast, and I'd give him the link, and then he could listen to that.
Exactly.
He would know everything he needs to know. All right. Well, that does it for Amazing Wednesdays. I feel as jazzed as always, and looking forward to Friday. Thank you, Stephen, for helping us put this together. Thank you all for being with us. We will be back again on Friday with another all-new show. And until next time, live to see it.